So today is the new year of the Western calendar. So it's the first day of January. And everywhere around the world today, people are celebrating the new year. On BBC, I heard that at midnight, there's a big ban in England, London, actually celebrated. I heard that people celebrating New Year.
Greeting and a Happy New Year. Actually, the coming year, whether become happy year or miserable year, depend on us. So, just the first day of the new year, I think we should determine, at least this year, I will be a more sincere human being, a compassionate human being, and try to create, firstly, inner peace, oneself, then try to share more people. That's the way to build happy year, isn't it? So, think that way.
So we celebrate the year with lots of festivities, and so whether his own is repeating himself in Tibetan now, what he has said, whether this year becomes a happy one or a miserable one depends on us. So each of us, if we could be warm-hearted, compassionate, and non-violent, and not harming others, and be moral, then this year would be a happy year. So this is what I told the Westerners, the foreigners. So for us, of course, it is the new year of the Western calendar, which is celebrated by everybody today around the world, and so we could also celebrate. And today also is the incidentally the the day of the passing away of the 13th Dalai Lama. So the 2013 has finished, and together with it, that we are. It is also the passing away of the 13th Dalai Lama. So the new year is the year of the 14th Dalai Lama, and so. Today is the on such occasions of Lama's passing away, we do make offerings of pujas. So a great number of people are gathered here. And so the Markham people have requested to make a long life puja offering to me. And so this was the initial request that they made. And then we have the monastics, male and female, from the monastic institutions. And then lay people from around different places have also gathered here. So in these several days, we have been engaging in Dharma discourse and spending our day in Dharma teaching. And each one has developed some degree of virtue state of mind during these days. And you are now praying for me to live long. And so then incomparable Dharma Lord, Garden Throne Holder, to Rinpoche. And also we should make prayers, pray for his long life as well. And then also all the masters of the Dharma traditions, whether they are here personally or not, those everyone who has, who actually bear the title of lamas and tulkus, and also the geshis and those who are teaching in the monastic institutions, we should also make a prayer for their long life as well, since they are serving the dharma, contributing to. So it is very important for these people who are actually dedicating themselves to contribute to the dharma to live long. We should make prayer for them. It's important. And so they are not thinking of individual gains, but for the sake of the dharma, and they work hard to teach their students and others. And so it would be good for us to pray for their long life. And not only that, today is the Western New Year, and the New Year, we have people who are dedicated for the welfare of others, who think of the larger benefit of sentient beings. And therefore, for such people, we need to make prayer for their long life and for the success of their wishes, and that they may have good health without sickness. And so, today, the people of Markham, both inside and outside of Tibet, are offering long life puja for me, and people who are suffering, living under very tense kind of situation. So I just met a Kampa who had really suffered in prison, a lot of torture in Chinese prison. And so there are many such people inside Tibet, and there are many of them also have passed away, and we should make prayers for them. And then people who have been released from prison, but who are still suffering, physically suffering, after being in the prison, we need to make prayer for them as well, for their good health. And then there have been many cases of self-immolation inside Tibet and outside, and so we need to pray for them as well. And so through such drastic actions, it's questionable whether it would be helpful to solve the problem of Tibet or not. And so we are following the middle way path, which is beneficial for both Tibetans and Chinese peoples. And we are actually building up friendship with Chinese. In any case, these self-immolators, although they had such courage to give up their own life, they could actually have and harmed others along with while harming themselves, but they did not do that. And so this is a very clear indication that they had followed the non-violence policy and principle even in such drastic cases. And so regarding People's Republic of China, it is the most populated country in the world, and the number of Buddhists inside China is 400 to 500 million, which is the largest population of Buddhists in the world, in any particular country. And so freedom and culture, people who are working for freedom and cultural inside China also, we should make prayers for them to have success and in helping others. Eons. pray that sentient beings, without exception, may be liberated by the sound of the great Dharma drum. Please stay to teach the path to enlightenment for inconceivable millions of eons. In the land encircled by snow mountains, the source of all happiness and benefit, Lord Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, I pray you to live until the end of samsara. Dimash. So at the fervent request of people of Markham, we have very we have here His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama. The friend of all sentient beings and the patron deity of Tibet, the champion of world peace and the leader, the master of all the entire teaching of the Buddha and Gaden Rinpoche and the abbots, lamas, tukus, and people who have come from around the world. On behalf of everyone, all Tibetans, I would like to greet you all. So today is the 2140th year of Tibetan calendar and the International New Year of the Common Era. Here in Zeratekchen Ling, where tens of thousands of people have gathered for the path to teachings on the path to enlightenment, as kindly accepted by His Holiness, our fervent prayer for to make this long life offering. So we, the people of Markham, who have a very pure devotion to His Holiness, so we pledge to obey your teachings. So Markham and its people have been under the auspices of the rule of the series of Dalai Lamas, His Holiness the Dalai Lamas, and we follow your directions, and we will follow. All your advice and the position of the Tibetan Central Administration. So we follow in your footstep, and particularly with regard to the Dölgel issue, we will follow you, your instructions, and Tibetans with who have been carrying on with the practice of Dölgel, we have severed our connection, religious as well as worldly mundane. So we in Markham we pledge that we will ask those who still follow Dölgel to stop the practice. And we'll pledge also to continue our pure, sincere devotion and in following your words. And we request you fervently, we request fervently for you to live long life. And when we had an audience, until the Tibetan cause, just cause, is resolved, that you have told us that you will live. And so, for the sake of humans and beings on this earth, as well as the Tibetans particularly, we make this long life offering to you, and Tibetans in Markham area, both inside and Tibetans from Markham, both inside and outside. We make our prayer for you to return to our land and visit Markham. So since the time of the Tibetan emperors, Markham has been under the Tibetan administration, and in 1642, when the fifth Dalai Lama took over both the dual responsibility of Tibet, Markham has been under the administration of the Gaden Potong Tibetan government, and we have received honorary gifts from the fifth Dalai Lama onwards, and particularly the 14th Dalai Lama, His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama, when at a time, at this critical juncture in our history, your kindness to us cannot be repaid, but with an unwavering devotion, and we praise you and so we also feel grateful to the Gaden Potong Tibetan government, as well as the city, the Central Tibetan Administration today. We make our fervent prayer for your blessings to us. So, on this 30th of the 10th month of the Tibetan month, the 1st of January 2014, we offer this statement.
So today, all the people of Markham region, those who are in Tibet and here in exile, so from all of you have offered a long life puja today. You have made a lot of effort, and I wanted to sincerely thank you all for the long life puja. And also looking back at the history, so the Markhamba region and the people were under the kindness of Tibetan government, and also many of the Dalai Lamas from the 5th Dalai Lama onwards. And whatever the you have all pledged that you will abide by wholeheartedly all the advices, and that is all the advices and given by the Dalai Lamas. We have an attendant in our office who is from Ganden Jiangzi Monastery. He has a long beard, a white beard, and he is very much attached to his beard, and he has a comb to comb, and which he brought it from India. And I used to sit on his lap and listen to stories. I think it was when I was about 7 to 8 years old. And he has a very good throat voice, and with his beard he can show a lot of magnificence by his deep throat voice chanting. And being a younger vice president, vice secretary of Tibetan Autonomous Region, at that time he was really very inspirational and working very hard for the people. And he also told us a lot of stories, and he's really someone who is really working hard for the people. And even during the 13th Dalai Lama's time, after the 13th Dalai Lama passed away, there was little conflict in the Markham region. So when they face this little trouble, and I also heard a few stories regarding all these events. So when you offer the Long Life Puja today, all these events back recollected in my mind. So today the teaching, as we have recited before in the praise of Tibetan arising by Lama Tsongkhapa, that among all the praises, to praise the Lord Buddha, that he is the teacher of preaching Tibetan arising. And and after that, whatever the teachings that you have composed, the teaching on Tibetan arising is the supreme one, which is the essence of all the teaching. And this is the essence of teaching of Nalanda tradition that we that we always revere so much. And the foundation of the Buddha's teaching also needs to be grounded on this very fact. And Lord Buddha, before he became enlightened, he took advices and also learned from many other sages. And in India at that time, Jainism was already there. They came many years before Lord Buddha's first noble truth teaching given at Varanasi. So all these great Indian traditions that has been prevailing for last or thousands of years are grounded on the very essences of the teaching of compassion, loving kindness, and discipline, and so on. And also in terms of the practice of the calm abiding meditation and special insight, in terms of the calm abiding meditation, there is a lot of common and similarities between all these traditions. And Lord Buddha has preached the view of selflessness, which is something which was beyond the ideology and the ideas of all the non-Buddhist masters. And it is only the Buddhist, it's only the Lord Buddha himself. Other than that, there is no other tradition except than the Buddhism who preach about the selflessness. And even though we all have the self-centered feeling that self is considering as inherent existent, and in order to confirm the identity of self as self-sustaining, they also consider the self as eternal, unitary, and interdependent, which become again in more service to confirm and to ascertain the eternal nature of the self. And Lord Buddha is the only teacher who preaches about selflessness. It is not ordered, but it is grounded in reasonings. And the reason we can find it is due to the dependent arising based on cause and effect, as it says that as a chariot is dependent upon its different parts, similarly, so even the self also dependent on its different aggregate. Even today, there are a lot of other traditions. So even though they are based on different philosophical reasoning, so there may be a different way to explain, but eventually they are all same and similar on the basis that they all work towards eliminating the suffering of the sentient beings. Therefore, when we say that whatever you give the teaching, it is grounded in the dependent arising. So when we speak about dependent arising based on cause and effect, it refutes the ideology of believing the Creator as the God. And also, it also explains about the self as not being eternal and impermanent, and also self as not being self-sustaining. So this is something common to all the Buddhist traditions. This all can be explained on the basis of the dependent arising of cause and effect. And when Lama Tsongkhapa says that these teachings are all in order to liberate all the sentient beings and to bring them nearer to the nirvana. So all the teachings based on dependent arising, the main purpose behind these teachings were to liberate all the sentient beings and bring them closer to Naya. All that you have taught proceeds by the way of dependent origination. That too is done for the sake of nirvana. You have not did that you do not bring peace. So if one understands these essences, then of course we essence the nectar of all the teachings. And also in the Kandenla Yama, that may we be able to illuminate all the essence of the teachings. So among all the great personalities and the scholars that happened in Tibet, the only one who teaches based on all the great learning, great extensive learning, looking at all the different texts of the Indian great masters, it is only the Lama Tsongkhapa who illustrated, who explains very clearly the nature of dependent arising. And also, when Mipham Rinpoche praised the Lama Tsongkhapa that you are the only masters in Tibetan region who explains, who illuminates the teaching of dependent arising so clearly. And when we pray about, when we pray that may the Buddha's teaching flourish to all over the world, so we have to think about the foundation as the root of the Buddha's teaching, which needs to be flourished. And we cannot crave towards the branches. So if there is no root or the foundation, then the branches will not be able to flourish. So this is what I felt that to tell you. So maybe tomorrow also we can discuss more about this. So the essence of all this teaching, which is known as Tibetan Arising, which is based on the great texts of Nagarjuna and so on, is something that we have to look at until our eyes become tired. And if it is someone who cannot see, then even he has to strive to understand this teachings. And in terms of Lama Tsongkhapa, we can have two different volumes on spatial insight. Then we have the commentaries on the fundamentals of Middle Way. Then we have the essence of all the teaching on interpretable and definitum of Lord Buddha's sutra. So all these texts composed by Lama Tsongkhapa are based on Tibetan Arising. And if I may say something about this topic, Trishu Rinpoche is a wonderful master, and he listened the Guhya Samaja initiation from me. Even before 1959, Tibetans uprising, he listened, engaging in the deeds of Bodhisattva from Lhendrup Tsundri master, and Trishu Rinpoche, whom Trishu Rinpoche's lineage, I also listened the engaging in the path of Bodhisattva from him. So since he have this great lineage, which ultimately goes to Zabdrung Rinpoche, so this lineage is very profound. So I also listened to him. So maybe most of you won't be aware of it. There was a master called Yendun, and Trishu Rinpoche listened Lamrim teaching from that very simple monk. So he was something which practices all the traditions of Buddhism. And he also took initiation of Guhya Samaja from me. And he was thinking about doing a retreat on Guhya Samaja initiation. And in Nepal, at that time, he was looking for some texts on how to do retreat and do the fire puja. There was a small Gelugpa monastery, and when he went to inquire about the related texts, and they told them that they do not have any of those texts related to the retreat and fire puja of Guhya Samaja. And Rinpoche asked them, "You are Gelugpa followers, and we are the meditators of Gelugpa. The main thing is Guru Puja, but it's not the Guhya Samaja. So Guhya Samaja is not our primary practice. So this is something really very sad. So even being a follower of Gelugpa tradition, of course, the Guhya Samaja teaching is the primary one among the texts composed by Lama Tsongkhapa. So without having an understanding of Guhya Samaja, it is impossible to gain some detailed understanding about the Tantra. So therefore, Lama Tsongkhapa has paid extra importance to compose the text on Guhya Samaja. So being a Gelugpa follower, it is very important, based on the Nagarjuna's text, then from their Lama Tsongkhapa's commentary on spiritual insight, the five texts composed by Lama Tsongkhapa on spiritual insight and emptiness. So this has to be the main text that we study. And Chogyam Rinpoche used to say that these five texts based on spiritual insight and emptiness, one needs to be trained and get used to these texts. So if one is trained and used to these texts, of course there is no doubt that we will realize the emptiness. And Lama Tsongkhapa's great treatise on Path to Enlightenment, whatever the teachings presented there is very presented general teachings which could benefit all the practitioners, not based on any individual practitioners. It was also not something being given to some specific people or some specific disciples. So in this way, of course, we can take it as a means to train our mind from stages onwards, improving it gradually. So even the text itself, the teaching itself, is not based on the blind faith, but if the followers do not have the faith grounded on reason, then of course we will be in the wrong way. So it is very important to understand the difficult points and the essence of all these teachings. And without having understanding of the whole structure of the teaching, so even though you may claim yourself as a practitioner of the Tantra, or even you recite the sadhanas of any of these great deities and so on, it won't be of much use. So it is very important to understand the structure of the teaching in general. Even for my own experience, I have generated faith in Lord Buddha granted one reason. And the reason behind those faith is due to studying the great text by Nagarjuna and so on. I have studied these texts and I have get used to some of these texts. So due to which I'm able to generate a faith grounded in reasoning and understanding. And once we have such a faith, and if it is someone who is unbiased, of course the teaching of Tibetan arising is something we can all be admirer of. And if I take an example, I have many friends in the field of scientists, in the field of science. I have many friends who are scientists. Of course, some scientists may be falling on some extreme. So even though they do not follow any traditions, but they say the teaching of Lord Buddha on Tibetan arising is something, a fact, that they also accept. And they also admire the teaching of Lord Buddha and Nagarjuna and so on Tibetan arising. We are not... spreading the teaching of Lord Buddha to a new world, but when we explain about the Tibetan arising and the emptiness given by teaching, it really helps them, even for a general people, how to live in a very calm way in their daily life also. Even if they think about the Tibetan arising, even for their business or medical or politics, for anything, so it will help them to have a broad view of the whole perspective. So without having an understanding of Tibetan arising, they will be led by whatever they see in front of them with having a very short version, short seeing. So it will harm them in the future. So the problems that we face a lot of in our daily lives are grounded in more causes behind it, which are further, which are something, some facts which we cannot see immediately. So with having an understanding, a rough understanding of Tibetan arising, it will also help us to concentrate, to take our daily activities in a more virtuous and more practical way. Therefore, I always, those resident teachers in the great many centers all over the world, that you have to study and you have to teach the tenets of different philosophical schools to your students. So due to different philosophical views, so in this way, for example, the four great tenets of Buddhism, from the Vaibhashika to Madhyamika. So in this way, since they are all based on different philosophical views, so it will be very helpful for the students to learn it. So once you teach about the four philosophical tenets, first we have to study different sects of Tibetan, irrespective of Bon, Sakya, Kagyu, and so on. And also Baba Vaveka's, the essence of the mathematical philosophy and his blaze of reasonings and so on. These are all based on, these are the texts of great Indian philosophers which we can find in Tengyur, the collections of the sutras. But they are based on different philosophical views that are found in great Indian traditions for thousands of years. And of course, whatever the presented there may not be a fact or may not be a reality, and they may have been refuted or negated in many other texts of Madhyamika, such as Buddhapalita and so on. And the centers, the Buddhist centers all over the world, if you study the Blaze of Reasoning by Baba Viveka and so on, it will be very helpful for the center and all the students and also the resident teacher, as it is grounded on the different philosophical views of intense schools. And of course, it will also help to understand about the Tibetan arising. So it will also help them how to lead their normal lives. So since there are a lot of scholars presented here today, gathered here today, that's why I explained this. Maybe you all know this already. So maybe some of you might feel that whenever His Holiness opened His mouth, He always speaks about emptiness. So maybe some people feel that I'm boasting. But that is not the case, because I feel that this is a very difficult and important point, and it's a kind of foundation of all the teaching. Such a kind of emptiness or Tibetan arising, Lord Buddha considered it as a special means or the foundation means to liberate oneself from samsara or to attain nirvana. And the actual teaching in order to bring us closer to liberation starts from the path shared by intermediate person. The path being shown for the small persons is not actual path that which leads to the liberation. If we carefully look at the Lam Rim Chemo by the beneficial qualities that are being explained about the bodhicitta mind, and of course, so until we attain the actual mind of awakening, so unless we have an understanding of the profound view of emptiness, it is very difficult to generate a clear understanding of bodhicitta. So in order to generate even a mere understanding based on extensive learning, it may not be enough for us. And upon that, we need to have an experiential, we need to have an understanding based on our experience. So with that, we need to utilize in such a way that we could convert these understandings and experience as a means to fight against the afflicted emotions. We are going through the sacred words of Manjushri. The fifth perfection, the perfection of concentration. So even though the concentration and spiritual insight are presented separately, but in reality, once we practice, we need to combine together. When we explain about in the presentation of the concentration, the nature of calm abiding and spiritual insights are presented together. So once having a calm abiding meditation, we need to strive towards generating the wisdom, which is the wisdom understanding emptiness. And with that, we will be able to eliminate the afflicted emotions, which are the root of the samsaric sufferings. All the different levels of concentrations and meditative stabilizations and also all the spiritual insights can be categorized into mere two categorizations of calm abiding and spiritual insight. Calm abiding is a kind of mind which focuses to its focal object and concentrates on it without distracting from its focus. And the wisdom having understood the reality of the phenomena, reality of nature, helps to cut the root of all the afflicted emotions. So here the kama biting and the wisdom has been taken from the example of a water and its functions. For example, in order to water to function in some way, we need a container for the water to stay. So similarly, if we are able to have to put the water in a container without moving, then it will help its concentration. When we normally do the placement meditation, we are only able to focus our mind to our object only for a short time, and after that it derives away from its concentration. And the reason behind is that we should train more towards it. Even when we normal do our prayers, so every day we have to make some effort that today I will do all my recitation prayer from the starting to the end without my mind being distracted. And the introspection or the watchfulness of the mind should be strong, and you have to motivate it in such a way for every day. So the changes will be difficult to be evident in 1 or 2 days, but as it progresses to weeks and months, then of course we will be able to generate a more calmer and more dedicated mind. And so all this will come from our acclimatizations. Even while reciting a single verse, we have to think about as much as possible to its meaning. If we do not have a concentrated mind, even though we may recite the text explaining about the compassion or the bodhicitta and so on, including the emptiness and Tibetan origination, but the effect generated will be very limited. So it is stated in the engaging in the deeds of bodhisattva that we need to have a mind, a very steady mind, like the great Mount Meru. And having such a steady mind of calm abidance, we will be able to generate the wisdom, which is the actual antidote to fight against the afflicted emotions. So therefore, we need to develop the calm abidance initially. In order to generate the calm abiding meditation, of course, there will be some difference with the surrounding and the places where one meditate. Sometimes the environment also makes some difference due to one's different elements within one's body. So due to all these conditions, sometimes it makes some difference in meditating. Also, we can see in the Kalachakra Tantras. And due to the lunar eclipse, and also in the practice of the great perfection of Dzogchen, so if the sky is clear, then it makes a difference. So similarly, such kind of conditions, which depends on the place or the environment, sometimes make some difference. So similarly, to have good companions while you practice. And sometimes if we have a very huge sounds of running water, or in great cities we have the sounds of the cars and the trucks, so it is recommended that we reside in a place where we have such less distractions. So even though you reside in a very favorable dwelling, as it is stated that even if you stay in a family or in a lay person, there is a possibility that you could attain liberation. So if you are not able to concentrate yourself, even though you may reside in one of the remotest, one of the most remote mountains, you may not be able to generate any understanding. So the main important thing here is one's own practice, including being less attached to one's belongings and relying upon food based on alms-seeking, and also having the clothes and the wares that is actually what is being needed, and being contented with what we have. So these are the four qualities that are necessarily in order to practice, and not to be engaging in a lot of worldly works, including paying too much distracted towards the medical areas, distracted towards astronomical things, and so on. So irrespective of any of the activities, maybe if it distracted us from doing our meditations, then it has to be abandoned. So having abandoned all things, once we need to have a disciplined life, which is the antidote against one's desire. So being mindfulness about one's own body is very important. Being mindfulness about one's body speaks about thinking about the impermanence nature of one's body, and also the unclean or the dirty nature of one's body. So having such a mind, of course, we can gradually progress further towards the attainments. And as an antidote against ignorance, we have to practice or develop the understanding of Tibetan arising. As Lama Tsongkhapa says that, I feel very admired to this system which eliminates all the, which is based on the teaching that eliminates all the afflicted emotions. As Lama Tsongkhapa also states in the starting point of the great treatise on Tantra, if someone is straightforward, or someone is unbiased, of course, if we indulge or if we engage in discussions, of course, then engage in discussion with him about the Tibetan arising, then it is impossible that anyone, be any scholar, can defeat the idea of Tibetan arising. So, but if the scholar or if that person happens to fall on any of the extreme side, then of course, due to their own feeling, their own assertions, they may be against the Tibetan arising. And in the four tenets, the higher Madhyamic schools, when they refute the assertions of the lower tenets, they do not forcibly do it. Whatever the critics coming from the lower schools, when they falsify, or they are not able to falsify the assertions of the higher Madhyamic schools. So these are all based on the ground, grounded on the reason. So having tenets and philosophical view, which is based and which is grounded on reason, which is the ultimate tenets or the philosophical view of Tibetan arising, then there will be no contradictory among the teachings. And it won't be able to defeat it by any philosophical school, and it will be the source of enlightenment. It is also evident in Kamala Shila's, and it was printed by some group of Jiangzi's Rinpoches. We can see in the commentary by Kamala Shila that even I may not be, I do not have the time, and it's quite difficult also, and I haven't read all the texts, but when I saw a few lines, and when they speak about the ignorance in pertaining to the cause and effect, And they have said it is written that having an understanding based on Tibetan origination can eliminate the ignorance pertaining to cause and effect. And this can act as a means to bring us closer towards liberation. So therefore, Tibetan arising, the practice of Tibetan arising or the understanding of Tibetan arising is the actual antidote against ignorance. And the five elements and also the consciousness, the parts of the consciousness need to be focused on their own focal object. So this may be against the as an antidote against one's pride. So sometimes when we feel that we understand and we know a lot, then when we think about all these details, then we feel that there are certain areas that we are not sure of. So in this way, we can lessen our pride. And in order to also increase one's knowledge, so the object while meditating can be different from the 12 interdependent links and also the details of positive and negative actions and the 18 different constituents and so on. So since the focal objects is very varied and diverse, so in order to understand each and everyone, we need to study a lot. And the next is the focal object in order to reduce or in order to fight against afflicted emotions, which are from the desire realm onwards to the form and the formless realms and the concentrations. So if we have those concentrations as one's object of meditation, it will help to reduce the afflicted emotions pertaining to them. So if someone is highly under the influence of attachment, then of course he or she should contemplate more on the impermanence or the unclean nature of our human rebirth. And if someone is under the influence of anger or is short tempered, the object for meditation should be kindness, the loving kindness. And if someone is under the influence of ignorance, then the object, the focal object, should be Tibetan arising. And here, the Tibetan arising is the subtle Tibetan arising being taught by the highest Madhyamika school. And if someone is full of pride, then if we concentrate on the different categorizations of the constituents and so on and place his mind on those focal objects and so on, it will help him to reduce, he'll help him or herself to reduce the level of pride. And due to the different mental needs, we have to seek different objects of meditation. For example, someone who is suffering from cold or suffering from heat, then he is to take a medicine which could cure that illness. And also in the sutras, the objects of the concentrations are said to be four. And someone may feel the wrong perception that we may need to take into account all these objects in order to meditate on karma abiding, which may not be the case.
Longer travel,
So when we practice about, when we speak about the Mahamudras and so on, so the concentration, the object of our meditation can start from something like flower, and from the which we started from our five senses, and it is a means to accumulate further, to train further our mind to concentrate and meditate on the objects. So from the mental from the mind, mental state itself, it may be difficult to concentrate fully at first. So first it is important to train from one's five senses, looking at an object of flower and so on. So that if the object is, so even if we meditate on a flower, so the mental state when we meditate, the flower should not be the same as what is being existing, a real flower. It has to be an image of the flower which comes to your mind, a kind of an image of that that particular object. So even that object need not be the real object, but the image of that object we take as an our object of meditation. And when we meditate the calm abundance of focusing towards Buddha's statue, so it is not the statue that's in front of us, but the image of that statue generated in our mind and focusing on that image. And also, the object of meditation can be different and variety also. And sometimes we can also practice calm abiding, focus on our mental states, and the Mahamudra practice that we can find in the Kagyu lineage are mostly about calm abiding towards, aim towards the mental states. And once we have gained a clearer image of the mental states, then we can further think about the ultimate nature of the mind, which is the emptiness. So even though in the Tantra practices, it is in terms of the practicing the emptiness, it is same. And since the mind itself is the cause of all the phenomena that we can see, so from one side, we can when we meditate on the emptiness of the mental state, so it can directly harm the mind which looks the phenomena as inherent or truly established. And also the mental state which is the ultimate of all the consciousness. And in this way, we can come to think that there is not a single basis to which we can grasp on, which we can think about it. So the basis itself doesn't seem to exist when we contemplate the emptiness nature of the mind. And in terms of the Tantra practice, when we meditate on the emptiness nature of the mind, according to the highest yoga tantra, that when we contemplate about the subtlest form of the mind, so gradually it also becomes subtle further until it becomes a very clear light. So we have to also train in this way through our experiences from studying from the elementary classes that the nature of the mind is luminous and clarity. So we have to take that example and practice to one's own self. And most of us are very accustomed to the five senses. So apart from the five senses, and also the if we are able to clear the five senses and the latencies and the imprints being planted by the five senses. So if we are able to clear off these senses, then we may feel a sense of an empty. And if we are able to focus our mind on the present continuous, so it won't arrive very quickly, but we have to make effort to try to put our concentration on the mind itself as much as possible. So gradually trying to eliminate the distractions coming relating pertaining to the five senses and so on. So the present mental state, which is free of all the other mental activities. So first we will think about the empty nature of that mind. Then after that, also the clarity and the luminous nature of that mind will come to our mind. So maybe it won't come to our mind because we are not meditating hard enough. So if we contemplate and meditate hard enough, strong enough, and that luminous and the clarity nature of that very mind will come to us. And in order, we should be able to stay focused on that very mind. So with that kind of mind as an object, and also try to categorize that into three times, the past mind, the present, and the future. And since the past and the future has to be dependent upon the present, it is very easy. Then where is the present one? What are the basis of the present? Then it is difficult to find. As it is stated in the 400 verses that it is, we cannot find the present form of the mind. Because we can either find the past or the present. So if there is not the present, which is the basis for the past and the future, then the past and future cannot be also found. So if all these minds are not to be found, then our perception of the mind as something existing from itself will be difficult to grasp. So at the end of the day, since we cannot find, then as Lama Tsongkhapa says, we have to train or bring our minds towards such an experience. So first, we have to contemplate, we have to generate the calm abundance, focus to mental state. But for other purpose, in order to dissolve the coarse and the rough nature of the mind to the drops and so on, so of course there are different varieties. So whatever the object may be of our meditation, the means to develop the calm abidance is through eliminating the five obscurations. So these five obscurations are actually explained very detailed in the Lam Rim Chemo. So it's very important to examine the details of the differences of these concentrations. As it is stated here that once our mind becomes pliant and become able to concentrate further on our objects, so all the understandings will be realized based on it. So in order to gain or develop such a calm abidance, we have to clear the five obscurations. And we have to take into account the eight concentrations. The first is being lazy, and the second is forgetting the instructions. So here the instruction is not something that the teacher directly gives you. Here the instruction means to thinking about, here the instruction is about the object of the meditations. So if you lose your focus or the object of your meditation, it means the forgetting the instructions. And also the laxity and excitement. And when the laxity and excitement arrives, not to practice introspection or watchfulness. And when there is no laxity and excitement, if we take into account the functions of introspection, then it is also an obscuration. So these are the five obscurations in order to generate the calm abidance. And what are the eight antidotes? What are the antidotes to five obscurations? So it is stated that there are varieties of antidotes to be practiced.
Mm-hmm.
So concentration or the meditative mind has to come from first being aspiration. So this is the first means to gain first means to gain calm abiding. First, one need to have a kind of faith. So the faith comes through a joyous effort. And if one practice if one becomes the pliancy of a physical pliancy in relation to the physical and mental states, so even though we may stay in meditative state for a very long time, but we won't the stiffness or the we won't feel difficulty in practice even for many hours. So by making effort, we will be able to we will be able to develop pliancy. And with that, we will be able to defeat the laziness. And the antidote of forgetting the instruction is to take the remembrance. And here the recollection or the remembrance is being understanding the object of meditation without forgetting it and without distracting from one's object. And remembering here is to clearly understand the object without being without losing one's focus. And the antidote of the laxity and excitement is as present in the essence of Madhyamaka philosophy, that the mental state itself is like a mat element which will roam and go all over the other places. And our focus should be something like being focused very steadily towards a pillar. And the pillar has to be tied by our mindfulness. So once the pillar of concentration has been tied by our mindfulness, and the wisdom, which is here the introspections, so we have to continuously watch, being watchful. And Lama Tsongkhapa has stated that the cause of the introspection or the watchful is first to think about the object again and again. So in order to clear such a kind of laxity and excitement, even though it is widely practiced or it is widely explained in a very popular manner, but many of the practitioners are not able to actually identify the real identification of this laxity. So when the laxity becomes a little bit more subtle, our focus on the object is already there, so there is a great danger that we may mistake the laxity to calm abiding meditation. So many of the scholars who they call themselves as the practitioners are not able to differentiate between the laxity and actual shamadhi or the calm abidance. Then what is excitement in the compendium of the manifest knowledge? So excitement is a mind which is by nature a part of the attachment, and the one which has the potential to make one's mind not at peace. And it is something which obscures to the attainment of the shamadhi or calm abundance. So when we speak about, when we explain the identification of excitement, actually it is not entirely a mind which is distracted or which is being angered towards the other person. When someone gets angry, of course, the nature of the anger and the excitement is similar in terms of being angered towards or being focused towards an outsider. But when someone becomes angry, the nature of the anger and excitement is different. All these conceptual minds that distract the attainment or the generation of karma abundance, we have to eliminate those minds in order to attain the karma abundance. It is also stated in the middle stage of the stages of meditation. So while meditating, if we lose the clarity of the object as in a darkness or as we close our eyes, then we are under then the laxity is approaching. And even though the object may be before us, but we lose its the clarity or its detailed parts, and it becomes unclear, then we will the clarity nature of that object decreases. Then we have to remind ourselves that the laxity is approaching and deserving in attainment of karma abundance. And here the mind of introspection has to be the one which actually able to identify when the excitement and the laxity approaches. And the introspection mind, the mind of introspection is something that when the excitement and laxity approaches, then it is able to detect them and re-divert our concentrated minds towards positive side or the negative or neutral. And when we have very strong laxity, then we may be very much towards sleeping state, or at that time, then if there is a huge danger, then we should think about the beneficial qualities of the life of leisures and advantages, and also and so on and so on. So even if that doesn't help, then we have to stand up, stop our meditative session and wash our face and go to a place where there is wind blowing or cool place. So in short, all the laxity and excitement comes through not being, not controlling our mental states, our senses, and not controlling the foods and the things that we eat. So we will stop here today for the morning session.